are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Collington, and joining me today, we have Mr. Mike Giletto Sr. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How's everybody out there doing?
Doing good, but you are not alone. We are also joined by a very special guest. He is the producer of The Marks and Reese Show on 94.1 WIP. It's Mr. Jack Fritz. How you doing, buddy?
How's it going, guys? Excited to be here. Flyers, I mean, for the first time in a little bit while, they have a nice little buzz going about them. You know, they're even slipping in on the radio. Mike's calling in on the radio, getting his Flyers conversation through.
Yeah,
and it's sweet.
Mike's developing a little bit of a reputation over there. But we're glad to have you join us, Jack. And throw out your social media for the fans in case they don't know who you are.
Yeah, so follow me on Twitter at JackFritzWIP. I'm sorry in advance for the multitude of baseball opinions I will give. But I'm mixing
Well,
because
you do your own podcast, right? You might as well throw that out, too.
I have my own. If you're a Phillies fan looking for good Phillies content, check out the iHopes podcast.
And that's great, but you're here for Flyers, and we're going to be talking Flyers with you for the next little while here. Before we get into that, the Flyers did have a good week, but I'm going to let you know you can find the show on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, SportsTalkPhilly.com, pretty much everywhere. Producer Mike is at Mike_Giletto. Mike Sr. is at Mike from South Jersey, if he ever figures that out. And you know what? We're just going to get right into it. The Flyers had another good week. Turns out when you beat most of the teams you play, you tend to have a good week. Flyers went 2-1.
Yeah, they're banking points. It's a good thing to see. And I'm going to start out with something really strange. After the loss, I was actually happy.
The Arizona loss might have been the best Flyers game they've played all year.
And I was actually happy that they lost because you can't win every game. And I was waiting for the period where they go out and they lose a game because I'm really looking forward to the next game. Because as you know, the last 3 years and earlier this year, this team was win 3 in a row, lose 3 in a row, win 4 in a row, lose 3 in a row. And just riding that roller coaster that they've been riding under Hextall for the last 3 years. Less so this year, obviously, because they won more. But I'm like, okay,
and
I want to see
them lose.
They're
not under Hextall anymore.
Correct. I want to see them lose a game and not lose 3 in a row. So I was actually like, okay, it was the best kind of loss, really, because they played really, really well. The other goalie beat them. It happens.
It's Darcy hockey. Kemper got you.
Yeah, exactly.
Just plain and simple. Darcy Kemper got you. And you're talking about the Thursday night game against Arizona.
Right.
Flyers lost 3-1. It was a 1-0 game for a really long time. Towards the end, the Flyers were pushing, and that's how Arizona got those couple other goals, but it was a really close game for the full 60 minutes, and legitimately the Flyers looked like the better team for a large portion of it. And that was your loss this week. You beat a really good Toronto team on Tuesday, and you kind of blew them out in the last 5 minutes. And then Saturday you had a bit of a slugfest with the Ottawa Senators, who are, should be a bad team and are a bad team. But they're feisty and they're scrappy, and we saw that with Brady Tkachuk up to his usual shenanigans yesterday. Jack, what did you think about that game?
Are the Senators like the team that is definitely bad, but the Flyers are just going to struggle with them this year? Is that what they are? It seems that way.
Actually, periodically they've almost always struggled with Ottawa. Ottawa was the team that they had the Sports Illustrated covered. 475 penalty minute game a few years back.
That was more than a few years back. That was about 15 years ago at this point.
But that's, I'm just saying, but that
Zdeno Chara was still a Senator.
Wow.
But that's the Ottawa Flyer that just seems, shit always seems to happen when those two teams play, and it's always scrappy. And that's what you saw yesterday.
Yep. That game, that brawl you're talking about featured Donald Brashear and Rob Ray going at it to start it. And if that doesn't date how long ago that was, nothing will.
God, I miss Donald Brashear. I love watching that guy just be on the ice. And you can just see other people on the ice being afraid of getting in the way of Donald Brashear.
Yeah, right, getting out of his way, absolutely.
He was definitely, I understand why fighting is being phased out of the game. But he's one of the reasons that people argue for it, because he really did create room on the ice. His presence created room for the skilled forwards around him, for sure.
Yeah, he was a thick cat.
That was so weird about watching the game yesterday. You know, I'm kind of getting back into the Flyers this year, and when the Tkachuk guy just jumped on Scott Laughton, I was like, I haven't seen that since I feel like the middle 2000s. Like,
it's been a while since you've seen somebody get absolutely jumped on the ice. Yeah, for
I was like, what is this? Like, what are we going back to? But yeah, it was a super fun game, and even you brought the Maple Leafs game earlier in the week. And I just remember from in the offseason, I guess everyone was talking about how good that Maple Leafs team was supposed to be. And for the Flyers, with how young they are, to kind of take it to that team in a way, I thought was like super impressive. So I feel like that was like a momentum building kind of win there. Like when I watched them earlier in the season and where I've been watching them now, you know, I thought early in the year it would be like, they're up 3-2 in the third period. And then all of a sudden with like 2 minutes left, they would just allow a goal or whatever.
They clenched up really hard, yeah.
Right, sure. And what I've seen the last couple of weeks, it feels like, is that they're learning how to close out games. They're learning how to finish games. And I know that they're so young, so like you're going to have to go through growing pains with the young team. But the fact that it feels like they're already starting to learn how to close out games, that's what I thought was so impressive about the game yesterday against the Senators, was like, wow, it feels like they're starting to figure out how to close out tight games late.
For sure. This team is, you know, Mike Senior, you and I talked several weeks ago about the system and about how it hadn't quite sunk in yet. And you were thinking that the team was bad, and I said it was the system. And you said, you know, or I think Dom might have asked. It was on an episode where Dom was on. And he said, well, what's the cutoff? When do you say, have they figured it out? And I said, oh, probably Thanksgiving. Well, Thanksgiving has come and passed, and the Flyers have won 5 of their last 6. I'm willing to take a little bit of credit here and say that they've kind of figured out the system. It certainly seems that way, at least.
I'm going to say less system, and it's more, I think they've accepted as individual players what Vigneault expects from them. Now, if you want to call that system, fine.
I think that's just the system.
What I mean by that is, and there was a couple of plays yesterday, and you know, I'm making my notes as I'm watching the game. There were at least two separate incidences where Sanheim goes into the corner, and if you remember back to the Penguins game, he made two critical mistakes playing a puck in the corner. He played the puck the proper way where the puck didn't end up behind him, and the worst that was going to happen is the puck was going to be at his feet. It wasn't going to be stolen. Just the way he approached the puck and his body position to the puck,
he's not going to get stripped clean.
Correct. And he made and look, the play ended up staying right there, and you know, eventually got moved up and the play got moved out. It wasn't any stellar play. He just didn't get stripped because of his body position to the puck that he wasn't doing in games 1 through 5. That, I think, if you want to call that system, okay, that's system. But that's Vigneault teaching, and then the other coach is teaching, there's a way to approach the puck in your defensive corner so that you don't get it taken from you.
And Vigneault has always been an innovator and really presses forward defensive play. So while I'm willing to say that, yes, he has probably taught Travis Sanheim a little bit about that sort of situation, that's also his system. That's what's expected of him. I think that's Vigneault raising the expectations for a guy like Travis Sanheim in a way that forces Sanheim to be better.
If you mean he's demanding he play a certain way, and I think the most important thing that Vigneault brings is he demands 24 guys, and I've said this before on the show, he demands 24 guys to compete for 60 minutes, compete for the puck in all phases of the game for 60 minutes, all 24 guys, including the goalies. And if that's, again, if you want to call that system, absolutely, that's what he requires.
Definitely. I was, Jack, back to you. I was actually at that Toronto game on Tuesday night, and it was actually hilarious. Kind of switching topics here. But Vigneault did talk about it a little bit after the game. You got up on that Toronto team. They had a lot of chances. I think the Flyers played a really good defensive game. I think Vigneault locked the Leafs down physically. He did a great job with home ice and line matching and getting the matchups he wanted on the ice. And the team as a whole played a great defensive game. But then you score the empty netter with 3 minutes left. And then you just dump two more in on Freddie Anderson just to kind of dunk on him a little bit. What do you think that does to Freddie Anderson, getting left out high and dry like that?
Well, I mean, it's almost like when you're a reliever and you're coming into a game and you're just getting shelled. And then the coach is like, ah, we'll just wave the white flag.
Just leaves you out there.
Yeah, just leaves him out there and leaves him out there to kind of die.
Take one for the team.
Yeah. Like, we don't want to waste the rest of the bullpen, guys. You know, just I need you to go. Now, that unfortunately was most of my college career. So I knew where the goalie was coming from in that situation. But, yeah, it was good to see. And I don't know, like, what have you guys, like, because like, I'm approaching this from, I'm kind of getting back into it, and everyone's talking about, you know, this Vigneault and Hackstall. Has kind of Vigneault just brought out a level of accountability that Hackstall didn't have? Like, does he actually, like, know how to rally the troops? Like, they see, like, just in watching the team this year, they seem like they play way harder, and it seems like they play smarter. Like, I've been super impressed with, like, they always seem to make the right pass, and they're always looking for the extra pass, and sometimes it feels like it's a little bit too much. Like, they're a little bit looking for that extra pass too much instead of, you know, getting a puck on the net. But it just seems like they are playing way harder, and that just was not happening under Dave Hackstall. And like Vigneault, is he going to be a guy that, because he's been in a bunch of places, is he going to be a guy that's kind of here for a couple years, gets his system in place, and they bring in another guy, like a small window kind of guy? I don't know. It's weird.
He's had a lot of success. I think he's a long-term plan guy. I do. I don't think he's in the short term, but I think you hit the bullseye right off. This was a dartboard. You hit the bullseye with the accountability word. He absolutely makes everyone accountable. And Hackstall was, you know, nice guy and all, but just not that guy.
I think that's fair to say. And, you know, obviously we don't know what's said in the room, but from the public.
No, I'm using play on the ice. Right, he clearly didn't demand play on the ice. The players compete all the time.
From the public perspective, I think Vigneault is definitely much more willing to call out his players. He called out Voracek and Giroux a couple weeks ago. He's had no problem coming out and saying, we need more from Sean Couturier. We need more from Jake Voracek. We need more from Scott Laughton, who we'll get into in a couple minutes, by the way. But Vigneault has done a great job of publicly holding the players accountable in a way that Dave Hackstall didn't. And obviously, we don't know what goes on behind closed doors, and Hackstall might have, and Vigneault, you know, almost definitely does. But it is good to see, and I do think that the players are responding positively to it. As for your question about long term, Vigneault has gone a lot of places and been successful right away. With the Rangers, I believe he made the conference finals his second or third year. Something similar in Vancouver. He's made a habit out of taking a team that's kind of in a place that the Flyers are in right now and taking them to the next level and putting them deep in the playoffs. So it'll be good to see. I'm not sure if his message is going to wear a little thin in a couple years.
The way he's delivering his message this year, I wouldn't think that would go south very quickly.
No, he's not doing it.
It's certainly not a, you know, who was the old Flyer coach who had the young Peter Zezel, that group of guys.
You're talking about before me and Jack were born here, Mike. You're on your own here.
He was a brutal,
You're not talking about Keenan.
Keenan, yes. There you go. He was brutal on the players. He's certainly not doing anything like that.
By the way, you with all this stuff about coaches, you know Mike Keenan's still coaching, right?
In the NHL?
In Russia.
Oh, okay.
He's in the KHL.
When you don't understand the language, it's harder to grade on the players.
In Russia, it's hard, period. I don't know if you've ever listened to stories, players telling stories, but some stuff goes on in Russia.
Do you think? I mean...
I'll throw it out there. If you haven't listened to Spit and Chicklets, they talk about it a lot. Rush is no joke for players, for Americans, period. Whether you're Keenan's a player or a coach, nothing.
Keenan's probably the soft guy over there. You know, he's probably...
He's probably the weak one.
Right.
He's the player's coach.
Yeah. Regardless, I don't know. I could see Vigneault. Maybe not wearing thin, but his message being a little stale in hopefully 4, 5, 6 years. Hopefully it's not for a very long time. But it seems like eventually the guys in the room will kind of just go, yeah, you know, we've heard this already. You know, we're ready for a new face.
Yeah, that was kind of the feel I had when I'm just been. Yeah. When he came in, it kind of seemed like a guy that was going to be a quick fix, and he was going to, you know, really raise their level of play for a couple of years. But then he did seem like a guy that would move on, and they'd have to find another coach.
He fizzles out a little bit.
Yeah. It happens all the time in sports. I mean, like,
for sure. John Tortorella might be the best example of that, because John Tortorella, almost like clockwork, just gets fired every 5 years. Just after 5 years, they're done hearing him. They cut him. He moves on to his next team to yell and scream. Exactly. And Vigneault is not quite as animated as Tortorella. But I could see something similar where he gets a little bit stale in the room and they need to move on to finish pushing over that hump.
Well, the good thing is, if there's anybody on the team who's going to sour on his message, it's the Voracheks and the Van Riemsdyks, and they're 30 plus. The Konechnys, the Provorovs, the guys who are getting better, Myers, the guys that are getting better under him, they're not going to sour on his message if they're getting better.
Hopefully
Provorov's
not.
Playing at a top 5, if not 10, NARS trophy level. Konechny's going to lead
Ivan
the team
Provorov
in points.
Is back.
Yeah, he's terrific. Konechny's leading the team in points. So if Vigneault's doing that to them as players, how could that message sour? It's going to take a long time for that to sour.
Yeah, and I don't think either Jack nor myself was talking about it happening this year or even next year. But in 3 or 4 years, when you've heard the same message, you know, every day for 4 years, it could very easily get a little stale.
If they're playing in the conference finals in 2 years, then that message won't go, you know, they won't be lost. It'll be like, wow, look where he's gotten us.
Listen, I said it on last week's show. I think they're playing in the conference finals this year.
I think you've got to get your flyer colored glasses off.
I think they're the best team in the city right now.
That's different than they can make the conference finals.
I understand. Jack, you work at a major sports radio station. Who do you think is the best team in the city right now? Now, I'm not talking about the most popular, because will always be the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, no, I know. We were actually talking about this last week. Well, off the air, we were talking about, like, who do you think has the best future? Who are you worried about
the most? It's the classic question. Who brings the next title to Philly?
Right. That's right. The one that's always asked. Exactly.
Right. And I would say more and more people are starting to realize that the Flyers, like, the Flyers built it the way that the Phillies should have built it, and the way that the Sixers, like, they kind of cut it off at its knees in a way. Like, the Flyers have all these young guys, and I know Hextall, like, they fired him and whatnot because he was afraid to bring guys up or whatever. But he did he did a good job. I mean, he built all this whatever, and they moved on from him because he just wasn't aggressive enough, which is fine, and now they are being aggressive. They're bringing all the kids up, and it's been fun to see. And I think anytime you have a team that the main core of their players is under like 23 years old, they finally have a goalie. I don't know how you could say it's anyone but the Flyers. Like, the Sixers are pretty much on, you know, they have Ben Simmons, who last night obviously started shooting and everyone's excited about that. Yeah. But Embiid, you just don't know with his injuries, and if they keep piling up, you don't know what they're going to get out of him. So it's like the Sixers almost have like a 4-year window here where they have to win a championship. I mean, so you look at that, the Phillies, who knows? I mean, they need to spend a ton of money. They need to buy their way out of their inability to do what the Flyers did, basically.
And if you're listening to the Hot Stove, it certainly seems like they're trying to.
They are trying to. I don't know if they'll be able to. And then the Eagles, it's like they're so old. Like, they're so old, and Carson Wentz might not be as good as we thought he was, and Doug Peterson might not be good as we thought he was, and Howie Rosen might not be good as we thought he was. So, like, the Flyers right now have a really good chance to kind of, you know, as we enter into the 2020s, you know, it might be a Flyers decade.
I hope that's the case. And, you know, this podcast is kind of, it was born from the Flyers not really receiving enough mainstream attention, and we wanted to bring a little attention to it. And, you know, this is how we've decided to do it. But I agree with you. For what it's worth, I think the Eagles get an absolute pass because you won a Super Bowl, what, a year and a half ago, 2.5 years ago?
It's a deserved pass. Come on. I mean, they gave us a magical year.
The Phillies pass is probably run out at this point, if not very, very close, from 2008. And then, I mean, the Sixers get no pass because they were a joke for a decade.
Yeah, but they are probably, in my mind at least, they're the closest to winning a championship. They're a little bit ahead of the Flyers, I believe. If not, even maybe even a little bit more than a little bit ahead.
You have to win on the road to win a title, Mike.
I'm sorry?
You have to win on the road to win a title.
No, I understand. I didn't say that they're poised to win a title. I said I think they're the closest. You can make the argument I'm not saying I agree with the argument, but you can make the argument they're the best team in the East. And okay, if you are and you win the East, you're playing for the title. The Flyers, you can't say, are the best team in the East or in their division even.
But it's so, such a different game. In the NBA, there's only four teams that have a chance to win a title every year. In hockey, out of the 16 teams that make the playoffs, all 16 can win the cup. And it's not really all that much of a surprise.
There yeah, it is.
It's not quite 16, but it's more than the NBA.
It's at least 14.
Well, 20 guys play in a hockey game.
You know, okay.
Eight guys play in a basketball game. It's, yeah, but if you're talking, it can be easily controlled by one player.
Sure. And I'm not saying right, wrong, or indifferent, but just stating facts. In the NBA, if you bet on anyone other than where LeBron, Westbrook, I don't follow the NBA enough to know more names, but if you don't follow Kawhi,
if you don't have one of the top five players,
you're not winning the title. Period.
Agreed.
And in the NBA, or in the NHL rather, that's just not the case.
No, McDavid's been the best player potentially for the last 3 years, and they've done nothing. I hear what you're saying.
The St. Louis Blues were a very good team and absolutely deserved their cup last year, but they don't have any superstars. They don't have a top 30 player. Right, and Binnington was playing like a top 30 player last year.
Right, right.
But no one legitimately thinks he's a top 5 goalie in the NHL. Maybe the top 10, but not the top 5.
All that said, I still think the Sixers are closer to winning a title than the Flyers.
Okay, and we'll see. And part of that benefits the Flyers because if they make it, they have a chance. But then part of it hurts the Flyers because if they make it, everybody they're playing also has a chance. So the Sixers might have an easier road there, but we'll see how it goes.
It's really only for a couple of years, though. I think it's only going to be for a couple of years, and then like the Flyers.
You don't think they have a sustainable system with the Sixers?
No, I agree with that as well. I think where Jack is going with that is the age of the players. The Flyers could very easily in 2 or 3 years be on the rise, and with Embiid and the health thing, they could be on the decline. Jack, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, like it feels like the Flyers window is just opening up, and it's weird. Like you have all the young kids, but then you also have Giroux, who's older. You have Voracek, who's older. Like they have a couple little older guys as well. So it's like once those guys kind of phase out, then they have the next crop that's all ready to go on the other side, and it just feels like their window is just kind of opening now. And they have a goalie, which helps. So
yeah,
then a goalie.
It turns
obviously
out Carter Hart is really good at hockey.
Shocking.
That being said, that the loss this week did come to Brian Elliott, that Arizona game. Yeah, he didn't really deserve the L. He happened to be
the goalie in the game that they lost, but it was not a good loss that you put on the goalie.
Right. Through the first two periods, I think he faced 9 shots. It was not the strongest game for the Arizona offense, but they don't really play a super strong offensive game anyway. So, you know, the Flyers kind of played into their hands a little bit. And, you know, when you play a defensive team and their goalie steals a game from you, that's just kind of going to happen sometimes. But like I said before, you bookended it with a big win over Toronto, and then you got 2 points from Ottawa. It was ugly. It was.
Yeah. You know what? The Ottawa game, I got to give a little bit of credit to Ottawa. They came into that game and they've been struggling. They're a down team, a down year. They're a bad team. They came into the game with a clear purpose. They were their goal was not to try to outplay the Flyers. They were trying to outfrustrate the Flyers, trying to take them off their game, make them play a game that they haven't been playing. And to the Flyers' credit, they answered the bell. You know, the old cliche, they answered the bell. And they played the Ottawa game and beat them at Ottawa's game. They were just as scrappy. Lawton was just as fierce. Lawton was hitting everything that moved.
Yeah, let's get into Scott Lawton after you finish your point here.
The hit on Konechny earlier in the game was probably a full second late, but a full second away from being a clear penalty for interference.
It was like
right on that borderline. You could see when the second period started, Lawton waited for the Ottawa player, I forget who he hit. You see he was standing right next to him, and he waited for him to deliver the puck into the zone, waited that full second before delivering the hit because he wanted it to be just as late, but not too late, as the Boriecki hit. And it was, to me, a great message, a tremendous message. You do to us, we're going to do to you.
Yeah, treat others as you would like to be treated.
Exactly. And he tried to time it the same exact way Borowiecki, I can't say that name.
Borowiecki, it's a tough one. It's a hockey name. That's fine.
There it is.
It's a very hockey name.
I loved that Lawton did that, and you could tell he absolutely did it on purpose.
Yep. That is an S, a K, and a J all right next to each other. You've seen the Chance the Rapper Hockey Reporter bit, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. that is an S, a K, and a J all right next to each other. How's that pronounced? Shay.
Okay.
I love it.
It's a great bit. Senior, if you haven't seen it, I'll send it to you. It's, you know, something the kids watch. It's fine.
Okay. Come on,
Mike.
I have not.
It's Saturday Night Live. Chevy Chase isn't there anymore. It's okay.
Chevy Chase was only there for a year.
Either okay, fine. Eddie Murphy's not there anymore. Is that better?
Okay, okay. I got you.
Adam Sandler's not there anymore. Yeah.
Did you know he got fired?
Yes.
Okay.
Back to hockey. Back to the Flyers. Back to Scott Lawton.
Adam Sandler, huge hockey fan.
Is a huge hockey fan. He's a Bruins fan. Whatever. Either way.
I left it at hockey.
Yeah. So Scott Lawton, he came back from injury 6 games ago. Since he has come back from injury, he has 6 points in those 6 games, 4 goals, I believe, including the game winner yesterday. Scott Lawton, bottom six guy, has been absolutely stellar this year.
He's been a bottom 9 through 12 guy the first 2 years of his career. He played really well last year on the fourth line. He is growing now exponentially. He's now a top 6 through 12 guy.
I think he's a second or third liner.
Third line. Yeah, third liner. No, if he's on your fourth line, you can win the Stanley Cup. If he's on your third line, you can compete for the Stanley Cup. He's turning into a really, really good player. He's found his role. He's found his niche. He's part agitator. He's part responder. He's part big goal scorer. He's part clutch. He's part hit. He's part defense. He's the kind of guy you need to win hockey games.
Yep, for sure. You know? And I think the eventual plan, assuming Nolan Patrick's healthy, you know, we're still waiting for him. Apparently he's making strides, but I feel like I've said that every week.
Well, I heard for the first time this week that he does plan. He's very hopeful that he's going to play this year.
Right.
And I know how ominous that sounds this year, but they do say he's a good chance that he will play this year.
Right. But I think at that point, if he comes back and after he gets up to speed, because obviously it'll take some time, I think Scott Lawton is going to be your fourth line center.
That which is fantastic.
With Tyler Pitlick and Michael Roffel on his wings. And Tyler Pitlick and Michael Roffel, I have spent a lot of time on this show complimenting them, and I will continue to. Tyler Pitlick has never taken a shift off in his time as a Philadelphia Flyer.
Yeah, he's been a terrific role player pickup. Terrific.
And Michael Roffel does exactly what you need Michael Roffel to do. He produces a little bit. He's good defensively. The fourth line of the Flyers is good.
Yeah,
the Flyers
he's very versatile. And if he can go up, he can go down. He's very versatile. Again, he's one of those guys. Look, there's a reason why they're 17-8.
If Nolan Patrick was ready to come back tomorrow, I don't know who comes out of the lineup.
It's a good problem to have.
Yes, it is a fantastic problem to have. And I think eventually what probably happens is Frost goes out to the wing, Patrick takes that center spot, and then they go back to having 12 forwards and find a defenseman to scratch. Because the last couple games, they have been playing seven defensemen.
Yeah, and Vorobyev goes back to the AHL, which is what he has the speed to play.
He's only in the press box here anyway.
He played yesterday.
Okay. Well, I'll be honest. I didn't watch yesterday's game. I was at PAX Unplugged. I'm not really sorry about it, following the game.
His AHL speed was fully on display.
Yeah, he that's about what Mikhail Vorobyev is, and I like him as a player.
Which is fine.
And he's a perfectly serviceable injury replacement.
He doesn't hurt you, but
he's nothing special.
He's an AHL guy, which is fine.
You know, to use a baseball term, he's a quadruple A guy.
There you go.
Well, that's what the Phillies are full of. So,
well, right.
Correct.
So it fits right in. So what do you guys? So Scott Lawton obviously is having like his breakout season. You would say. I mean, he's only 25.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if he's ever going to break out. He was a first round pick. Well, I think he's playing up to first round pick pedigree a little bit better than he was last year.
I say he's certainly breaking out of who he was the first 4 years.
Yeah, that's,
and if you look, and if you look at the trajectory of his career, you know, it's certainly on the rise. Last year he was better. He wasn't great, but he was better than he was
prior years
because he was more slated to a role. When you're drafted number one and you're put on the first line, second line, and much is expected, and you don't meet those expectations, you know, I respect the guy who says, okay, maybe I'm not that guy, but I'm going to now be this guy. And he's embraced that role, and he's very good at it.
Yeah, he's done a spectacular job of just making himself useful in any way he can. Yeah.
I like how much he chirps. Like, you know, yesterday.
I love it.
He scored that goal and just drive-by'd the entire Ottawa bench.
And then he got jumped for it. So, I mean, I would say the message got through.
Yep, and he drew 4 minutes worth of penalties.
He sure did.
And it was with 25 seconds left in a game that the Flyers had the lead anyway. But if that's a tie game and he draws that penalty, that's huge. You know, if you're down a goal and he draws that penalty, that's huge. It's the kind of play.
And if nothing else, he took the last 25 seconds of opportunity for Ottawa to try to tie the game. He removed that.
Exactly. And Brady Tkachuk had an absolute meltdown. And that's a situation where your discipline's just got to be better than that. You know, you're down one goal. There's less than a minute left in this game. And you just attack this guy for no reason. Like, you got to go after the 2 points there.
I agree, but as a Flyer fan and enjoy players playing a certain way.
Oh, for sure.
I love the emotion as well.
Absolutely. You'd love to see him on your team.
If I'm going to lose, I'm going to extract my pound of flesh.
Yeah, you love to see him on your team.
Correct. Correct.
I'm sorry, Jack. You were talking about Scott Laughton.
Oh, no. I was just saying, what could Scott Laughton be? Like, I agree. I think if you say, like, he's your third line center, fourth line center, like, your team's really, really good, but... Like, is there an upside for even more from Scott Laughton, or is this kind of what we're going to get? Like, a good player that is going to be an agitator and is going to be, like, a good Flyer, but maybe not get back to the first-round pedigree like you guys are talking about.
I think he's a slightly less offensively skilled Sean Couturier. Couturier, it took him until he was about Laughton's age to break out and start putting together 30-goal seasons. And now he's done it 2 years in a row, and, you know, he's got 76 points 2 years in a row, and he's really starting to develop his reputation as an offensive powerhouse in this league. I think Scott Laughton is a slightly scaled down version of that. Instead of 30 goals, 76 points, I could see him as a 20 goal, 60 point guy. And I think that's a really good spot for him to kind of nestle in. I don't think he's quite there yet. I think it's one of those things where you're okay with him being your third line center. You're ecstatic if he's your fourth line center. So maybe even a little less than 60. Maybe in the 55-point range.
If he's one of your top two centers, I think, even though he's still only 25, I do think in the long run, if he's playing first or second minutes, yeah, your team's probably going to struggle.
Like, he's not going to actively hurt you because he is good defensively and he's smart with the puck, but he just can't quite generate offense in a way that a top six center has to be able to in the NHL.
Especially if he's playing against other top six forwards, his game's going to take a step back.
Well, what's great about this team is, like, they don't have to rely on him to be that way anymore.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And that's why I think he's been flourishing the way he has. Couturier stepped up when he stopped playing with, like, Matt Reed and RJ Umberger and started playing with Claude Giroux and Jake Voracek. Laughton, I think his game is better than his offensive game is better than Couturier's was before he broke out, but it's not going to get as good as Couturier's has gotten. You know what I mean? Like, I think his floor is a little higher, but then his ceiling is also a little lower.
I'll agree with you and hope you're wrong.
Oh, I totally hope I'm wrong. I hope he scores 40 next year because I'm a Flyers fan. But, you know, in terms of evaluating a player, that's kind of where I have him.
Yeah, I would agree.
And he has stepped up and played top six for a game or two here when lines got mixed up or there were some injuries or blah, blah, blah. And he was fine. He's good at shutting down the opposing line. He can handle your average first line. He's not going to be shutting down McKinnon, Landeskog, Rantanen, or, you know, Matthews, Marner, Tavares, you know, or any of the elite lines.
Yeah, no. Yeah, he definitely doesn't have the game to play against Crosby and those guys. Where Couturier is much more equipped to handle those players.
You know what? But in a playoff series, if you're playing the Penguins, I'd be okay with seeing Lawton matched up with Evgeny Malkin. Because he's got that little bit of agitator, and Malkin has a temper.
And you can get under his skin, yeah.
And Malkin provably has a temper. You know, if you remember last year when he swung his stick like a baseball bat at Michael Raffle's head.
Yep.
I could see Scott Lawton over 5, 6, 7 games in a playoff series really, really, really irritating Evgeny Malkin. And then you have Sean Couturier to shut down Crosby. If the Flyers play the Penguins in the playoffs, they're beating them. I said it here first.
Uh-oh.
They're beating them.
You want to get the city all back in on Flyers. They need a Flyers Penguins series where the Flyers beat them. They would send the city into a tizzy.
I hope so, and I hope that's the case.
Yeah, the Flyers Penguins rivalry has definitely taken over the Flyers Rangers rivalry. It's definitely a bigger rivalry now
since Sidney Crosby was drafted.
Yep, absolutely.
For sure. I actually think it's still the best rivalry in the city right now. Like, if I had to pick my favorite rivalry to really get behind and really get, like, Flyers Penguins is the only one right now that, like, elicits an angry emotion from me. For me, like Eagles Cowboys is almost like both teams suck.
I think the thing is, what individual does this, like, from a sports perspective, what individual does this city hate as much as Sidney Crosby?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. I mean,
like,
if
Dak hasn't won enough that we hate him.
I think people hate Zeke. I think people hate the stupid feed me thing.
What's he won, though? That's the thing. Is like, hatred comes from success. We hate Crosby because he's so successful.
It's a personality thing with Zeke. I agree. It's definitely a personality
for
thing.
Sure.
People hate.
But it's a little different. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, no, I understand.
But like, I agree with you. Like, there's no one on the Celtics. Like, I did hate Horford. You know, I hated some of the other guys that were on the Celtics team. Like Marcus Smart's obviously up there with Sidney Crosby. Sidney Crosby is like actually good at his sport. So Sidney Crosby is the perfect mix of like awesome at his job, but also
full disclosure for me, the last time I paid attention to the NBA, the Celtics had Paul Pierce.
Okay. Well, that was a little bit back in the day, but you know what I mean.
It's like, been a while ago. I remember Kevin Garnett moving over as like the biggest story on earth.
Yeah, but when both teams were good. So like the Sixers weren't good right when they moved over. So I would agree with you. And if you can get Flyers Penguins, I mean, the city's going to be buzzing, and I'm very much rooting for it.
Yeah, and you know, you saw a touch of it in the stadium series last year. I don't know if you caught that game, Jack, but
I did, yeah.
The environment was insane. 70,000 people, dramatic comeback, overtime winner, Claude Giroux. That was a little sparkle, you know, and it was 24 hours before Wayne Simmonds got traded, but it was just a little sparkle of what that rivalry, you know, still is.
Yeah, I mean, I was out at the Stadium Series game the year before, out in...
At
Pittsburgh, and, like, I was, you know, kind of following the Flyers from afar, wasn't watching as much as I am now, and it's still, like, I still hated everything about that city, and yep. I remember when I got to Pittsburgh for the first time, like, I'd never been there before the Stadium Series, and I parked my car, and I looked around, and I was like, how does this place have 7 Super Bowls? And, like, what is it about this place? It's like, why do they have so many championships? And
we're, they sacrificed their baseball franchise.
Yeah.
Because the
sure
Pirates
did.
Are atrocious. And always, always have been.
They always have been. So, I was out there, and I was like, man, they don't deserve this. It's such a boring city, but, you know, whatever.
But you know what? I want to wrap up kind of the week that was and the week that's going on, and then I want to close the show with a little bit of more casual conversation. Because Jack, I know you said you're still kind of you were a big hockey fan growing up, but you're still kind of getting your way back into the game and kind of jumping on the bandwagon a little bit.
I'm not afraid to admit it. Yeah, I'm not afraid to admit it. I am getting back on the bandwagon. I have looked more forward to watching Flyers games this year than Sixers games. And if you told me that 2 years ago, I would have told you were crazy.
Yep. And
that's awesome.
That comes when your team is sixth in the league in standings and, you know, firmly in a playoff spot. I know it's too early to talk about a playoff race, but, you know, they're still firmly in a playoff spot.
And they're young and fun, which makes it even better.
Exactly. I don't think it's just the fact that they're winning. It's the way they play. It's the way they compete. Yep. It's the way they play hard. And Jack, you've hit on a couple things earlier, and I'm going to completely agree with those. If you look at the Giroux's, the Van Riemsdyks, the Voracek's, the 30 and older, the less that those guys are playing, the better this team is playing. And there's a ton of youth on this team. Konechny's 22. Lindblom's 23. Hayes is only 27. Sanheim, 23. Ghost is only 22. I'm sorry, 20. The Provorov is only 22. The list just goes on and on and on of how young this team is. And the window is,
you
like
forgot
you said,
to mention
just
that Carter
opening.
Hart is 20.
Oh, yeah. I didn't want to name 25
maybe he
guys,
turned
but
21.
Yeah, it's all true. It's all Myers is very young.
It's unbelievable.
Farabee's only 19. Frost is 20. I mean, the list is on and on. And like I said, if there's a window, this window's only cracked an inch.
Yep.
And in the next two or three years, I think you're right, Jack. I think the window goes wide open.
And also, quick note, Joel Farabee did have his first professional fight yesterday against the Ottawa Senators. He got a fighting major. Let's put it that way. A little bit of a wrestling match.
Voracek actually managed, every show I have to say at least one bad thing about Voracek.
Of course you
How
do.
How do you get a 5-minute major without throwing a punch?
How does Brady Tkachuk not get a 5-minute major at the end of the game for throwing several punches?
Yeah.
But that's a whole different question.
Correct.
The upcoming week, Mike Senior and I have not talked about when we're recording next week because the Flyer schedule is actually a little funny. They play Winnipeg at 5:00 local time. So Senior, you and I are going to have to decide if we record before or after. But in the meantime, the Flyers have don't play till Wednesday. Colorado on Wednesday, 9:30 start, which I hate. That's too late. And then on next Saturday, you play Minnesota, who's not a very good team, but they're one of the hottest teams in the NHL. So you got Colorado and Minnesota, and they're two tough games. Colorado is really, really good.
And then you have Winnipeg in a back-to-back who's also playing very, very well.
Yeah.
Tough week coming up.
Flyers definitely have a tough week. Now,
on the road.
Yep. Looking a little bit forward, it gets a little easier after that. You have Anaheim and then Buffalo, who's good. But then you have Ottawa and the Rangers, who are bad. So, like, it is just a pretty small stretch. But these next three games are tough. All on the road. You're kind of going out west a little bit. And you know, you have 3 days off. I kind of hope they went to Colorado like today. Get out there, get a little time away. You don't play till Wednesday night.
Yeah, hopefully those 3 days will give Konechny some real good healing time. If it's a concussion
thing. He did leave the game yesterday. Yeah.
So hopefully those 3 days will give him enough time to be healthy enough to play Wednesday. But here's what I'm going to say about this team and where I really think it is in a good place. I think this team looks at that and says, "Hey, we're really challenged this week."
Yep.
We're really going into a buzzsaw.
Can we get five out of 6 points?
Let's see how good we are. I think they'll take it as a positive and attack it from that perspective. I really think that's the personality of this team.
I hope that's the case, and that's something that Flyers teams historically have struggled with a little bit. You know, we've talked for a long time about this team playing up or down to the level of their competition. And let's see if the Flyers can elevate their game and, you know, prove their worth as a top 5, top 10 team in the league.
Yeah, we're definitely going to find out. Again, I think they're going to take a very positive approach to it.
Yeah, and look at you being positive about something for once. That's new.
Well, the team's given me a lot to be positive about. The last, you know, last 2 years, I haven't been all that positive because
this team has warmed your cold, dark heart. It's a Christmas miracle. Your heart grew 3 sizes that day.
You can't call me a Grinch if I'm down on the team because they're playing like crap.
Oh, that's not why. I just call you a Grinch in general. Because every week in fantasy hockey, when you lose, it's definitely not your fault.
Like I say, I lose to players like Jake Voracek, who get a fighting major for the first time in his career.
No, he's fought the Penguins before. Jake Voracek has a couple fights. Jim Jackson even said it on the broadcast. Jake Voracek, he's no stranger to fighting. It's the direct
quote. I'd rather him be fighting. At least he's not turning the puck over.
That's fair. And listen, you can't turn the puck over at your own blue line when you're in the box.
Correct.
So you should be grateful for that. All right, well, the Flyers have an upcoming week, and we'll get into that. But like I said, I did want to end this show with a little bit of a casual conversation because, no offense, Jack, we do have a little bit more of a casual fan here.
You could say that.
Well, you know, I don't want you to think I'm insulting you. It's just fact. So, all right. Growing up, you know, you and I are a very similar age. We talked off the air. We're about 2 years apart. Who was your favorite Flyer growing up? Like, who was your guy?
Man, like, I love LeClaire. Back in the early days. I love Primo. And what's so funny about every time I watch Kevin Hayes, he just skates just like Keith Primo. And I'm like, he looks it's like I'm just watching a clone of Keith Primo.
Mike Senior has been saying the same thing all season.
I've been saying that for you now the whole season. I've been saying when I see him skate, I see Primo.
Now you told us before the show that you hadn't been listening to the show, but I don't believe you because that's a little suspicious because Mike's been saying the exact same thing.
What's funny is when I was watching earlier in the season, the first time I saw him skate, I texted Jim Jackson and I was like,
I just casually texted Jim Jackson. No big deal.
So Jim, he works all the Phillies games. So he does all pre and post for the Phillies. So I used to produce every Phillies game back at the station. So me and Jim became pretty close.
Casually name dropping that you just texted Jim Jackson. Not a big deal.
You know, I work with Al Morgan and Keith Jones. If you need me to keep, I've proven that I'm a hockey guy. You know,
I mean, if you can get him on the show, you can drop as many names as you want.
So I texted Jim and I was like, my expert hockey analysis is that Kevin Hayes skates just like Keith Primo, and he's like Bill Clement said the same thing. So me and Bill Clement. And Mike are all on the same page. We all agree that Kevin Hayes skates like Keith Primo.
You think I'm just making this stuff up, right?
Don't pump his tires that much. He doesn't need the ego boost. Okay, so you were a Keith Primo guy growing up. Were you awake for the 5 overtime game, or did you go to bed?
I honestly don't remember, but I have an awesome poster of it. So I have a poster of it signed by Primo. So I'm going to say I was awake.
I think I have the same exact poster. It's like 1 of 400 or something.
Yeah.
And I think you and I have the same exact poster.
I have another Flyers poster from somehow they put all their goalies together on one poster. Like all the little headshots, and it ended up looking like a Flyer. So you had like Čechmánek and Hextall and like.
Oh, man.
It was just like all those guys forming a Flyers thing with Boucher. All the little headshots of all the horrible goalies they've had throughout their lifetime. So, and then like, you know, Gagné, I was a Gagné guy. Desjardins.
Okay, a lot of people my age were big Gagné because he broke out when I was 6 or 7, which would have made you 4 or 5. And, you know, that's the perfect time to watch a player like Simone Gagné for sure. Exactly.
And I don't know why, but I always laughed at Eric Desjardins because I never knew if he could talk. Like, he just looked like he was just a silent assassin all the time.
He never spoke to the media, nothing.
He was a great player, though. Great player.
He just looked miserable all the time.
You know, the Jack, best hockey players really do.
Yeah,
I have to ask Jack a quick question because there's a name in all of that that is glaring. In its omission.
Oh, no.
And it just seems like there's a story there. You didn't mention Big E.
Lindros?
Yes.
So, funny story. Like, the first time I'd ever, like, elicited an angry emotion was when Scott Stevens hit him in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I was, maybe, you know, 4 or 5. And to this day, I don't think I'll ever hate an athlete more than I hated Scott Stevens for that period. Like I got into the Flyers at the, I never saw prime Eric Lindros. Like I saw
that,
like,
Stevens that really ended his career. And if you were 4 or 5 for that, then I guess it makes sense.
Right. Like, I wish I could have seen what Eric Lindros was like. And everyone talks to the station about how crazy it was, you know, when they were awarded Eric Lindros and how the station was just on fire talking about the Flyers because Eric Lindros was that kind of guy. So I unfortunately missed most of prime Eric Lindros, but I remember when Scott Stevens hit him, and I will never, ever hate an athlete more than I hate Scott Stevens.
That's an excellent hate. He ruined a good number of good Flyers teams.
He's ruined a lot of teams, to be fair.
Yeah.
It's not just the Flyers.
He's one of those players who accomplished a lot, won a lot, hoisted the cup a lot. And,
killed a couple guys.
And a guy that we absolutely hated. He's definitely in the top 10 of all-time hated athletes for me in the city, without a doubt.
And I think it's kind of a similar, it's a similar thing where you hate him, and part of the hate is because you see how successful he was, and that's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, but he was successful at being a... You know, an asshole.
Oh, yeah, a monster. Absolutely.
Yeah, great player. I just hated everything about him.
And he, you know, didn't get suspended for any of those hits. They were all, at the time, completely legal.
It was mostly illegal. It's probably a legal hit today. All he did was body check.
He picked the head a lot.
Lindros's head was at his waist.
It doesn't matter.
You can't skate with your head down.
You can't finish the hit. Well, no, Lindros particularly, I'm not talking about, but Correa, he destroyed Correa. That's not a legal hit nowadays. That's late and high.
Agreed.
Either way.
He would have to alter his game to some extent today.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Jack, any memories of going to games growing up or...
I was at the Calder Cup Championship in 04.
Oh, nice.
I was a big Phantoms guy. You know, I think Richards was on that team.
Me and my son were at that game.
That was a lockout year, wasn't it?
It was. That's why I was at the...
So that was a good team.
Yeah. That was the Spectrum, right?
Yeah, it was at the Spectrum. Yep.
Yeah, me and my son were at that game, yeah.
I believe Patrick Sharp was on that team.
Yes, he was. A bunch of
fun young guys. So I was at the Calder Cup Championship game, and I don't know why I watched so much AHL hockey, but like I used to go to a Hershey Bears game every single year and get
you know
into
what it was. Cool. And I'm telling you this because, like I said, we're about the same age. Tickets are cheap.
Tickets are really cheap. Tickets are really cheap.
We sat 8 rows off the ice. The tickets were like $12.
I know, and I remember.
That's why you went to a lot of Phantoms games. I'll tell you from somebody who knows.
That's why my dad was willing to shell out the money for a Phantoms game.
You've been to a Flyers game. You pay $100 for a seat, $12 for a beer, $11 for a slice of Lorenzo's pizza. It adds up pretty quickly.
It does for sure.
You want a hat? It's $30. Programs are 10. Like it's crazy.
Everyone talks about Flyers Penguins. I would just say that Bears Phantoms was a serious rivalry.
Bears Phantoms was great.
It was.
So I'm gonna say a name and you're gonna remember it. You ready? Mike Senior, you'll probably remember it too. How do you feel about Frank the Animal Bialowis?
Oh, Frank, I do remember him, and I also remember he used to call into our station all the time talking about like hitting this guy or whatever. Crazy guy.
He was nuts.
He was big. He was a big cat. He really was a big guy.
He was absolutely insane, and he was so much fun to watch as a
kid. Nickname.
Yeah, he had that long, greasy hair that, you know, as soon as the fight started, that was back in the day when you could take the helmets off, and he would always take the helmet off and shake the hair out and then just absolutely beat the snot out of somebody. It's fun to watch, for sure.
That's it.
All right, so we're going to wrap this show up. And before we do, give me your best Flyers memory ever. You know, senior, yours is probably, you know, when the team was founded.
I was going to
date myself and tell you, you guys are mentioning ticket prices. The mid-80s, I had season tickets at the Spectrum. My price for the season in the mid-second level, excellent seat, $440, including 4 preseason games. So $10 a ticket.
For the year. Oh, that's funny. All right, Jack, single best Flyers or Phantoms memory, if you want. If that Calder Cup is it, then that's fine.
I mean, for me, just that whole... And obviously, the Cup run was crazy, but just that whole
Bruins... The 2010 run.
Yeah, but the whole Bruins series, I mean, down 3-0, coming back. Like, for me, that's up there with my favorite Philadelphia sports memories because it's Boston.
Overtime game 4, too. The Bruins were one bounce away from winning that series in 4.
Right, and that was back when, like, I would be watching, you know, a Flyers playoff game and there'd just be a pit in my stomach the whole entire time. And when they got down 3-0, I was like, oh, here we go. But it was, I would say for me, that was it. And I'm just excited. I'm excited that they are back on the trajectory of being back in those conversations. So it's been awesome. It's been awesome getting back into them. You know, like Morgan Frost, I think is already my favorite player just because
he's so much fun to watch.
Dude, like his hands are just so crazy quick. And I love Morgan Frost.
Multiple people here on this show has compared him to Danny Briere.
I mean, if he's Briere, that's incredible. So
he wears the same number. He celebrates his goals the same way. The
similar
kid just
size.
Plays the same game.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, can I just get one? Yeah. I just want to get one thing out there that I think is funny every time I see him on my screen.
Yeah, do your thing.
I can never help but laugh when I see Brian Elliott just on a screen with his helmet off because he just looks
He's such a dad.
He just looks like every suburban dad out there. Like I can just I can't tell if he's a goalie or he's flipping burgers on a grill, like talking
or
about.
Or he's the equipment manager, right?
And I looked up his age, and I would just like to say I think Google's lying. There's no way he's only 34 because I'm pretty sure he's at least in his 40s.
He looks like he wears socks with sandals.
Oh,
so
for
sure.
So
if you meet him in a bar, you're not thinking professional athlete.
No, I'm thinking like who let the dad in the bar? You know, I see him wearing like white Nikes or like white New Balances, just like walking around. You know,
corny. Jeans. Yeah,
definitely corny ass jokes. That's for sure. There's no way he's funny.
It's funny.
And on a team, you know what? On a team this young, they need a little fathership.
I would say so. With that. I mean, he played with Bobby Clark, I think. So, like, he's just so old. He's so old. There's no way he's 34 years old. I love seeing him on my screen. It makes me laugh every single time.
And you know what? He's putting up his best numbers in a very long time, too.
Yeah, he's playing well, man. He's playing well.
Playing tandem with Carter Hart.
I mean, talk about an age discrepancy.
Yeah, absolutely. So
they're a generation apart.
They are.
They sure are. He could be his father.
He was Mike Senior's favorite player in the 80s Flyers.
That's really funny. Well, on that note, we're going to get out of here. That was a great conversation. You can tell us more about the show on Twitter at YWT Podcast. Don't forget to tweet producer Mike, and we'll be able to get more guests like this at Mike_Giletto. Although this booking was actually set up by Mike Sr. at Mike from South Jersey, so you got to thank him too. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcast, SportsTalkPhilly.com, anywhere you can find podcasts. Jack, why don't you throw out your information one more time for the listeners?
Yeah, so follow me on Twitter at JackFritzWIP. And as always, if you're looking for some, you know, Phillies conversation on a Flyers podcast, you can look for the High Hopes podcast. And, of course, listen to Marks and Reese in the afternoons. We will talk Flyers as they continue to heat up.
I hope so. Great. You know, we got to get Ike watching some Flyers.
Hey, man, Ike's all in. Ike watches more sports.
I hear Ike. He sounds ready to go.
He watches more sports than people give him credit for. He is always watching everything, so...
I thought he just watched Michigan State all the time, even when they weren't playing.
He does love Michigan State. You
know, I thought he just watched replays of Michigan State football games over and over and over. Like, I thought that's all he did.
Nope. He is all in on everything. So we are all good.
Well, all right, Jack, thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, Jack, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. It was great having you.
Of course. Thanks, guys.
Welcome having you back, of course.
Mike Sr., good to have you, of course.
Always a pleasure to be here.
All right, and we'll be back next week.